you smell what Barack just cooked?
I'm here to challenge you to a match.
When it comes to standing up for the American people, I am ready to rumble.
I think that we may need a wrestler in the White House.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Great American Bash. My name is Brandon Weatherby.
My name is Chris Kelly.
I am in Washington, D.C. It is Friday morning. You are not in Washington, D.C.
Yeah, I'm down at the beach.
Which beach are you at?
Rehoboth, Lewis.
Fantastic.
Rehoboth and Lewis.
All right. It is currently Friday morning in the 8 a.m. hour. And since I worked on this outline last, and since we woke up to record this, actual news has happened in the Donald Trump campaign.
Yeah, there's been a lot going on. Where do you want to start?
Let's just start. There's no way we can do this reverse chronologically because it doesn't make sense. So let's just follow our lovely outline of absurdity. And it all begins with the Trump shakeup or not shakeup, depending on who you believe.
Right. So a few days ago, within the last week, there was news that Paul Manafort, Trump's campaign chairman, who we knew had worked with the pro-Russian forces in Ukraine. Sounds like he was on the front lines. But no, he had received, there was a ledger revealed that he had received payments of $12.7 million for his efforts. That story was actually tweeted at some point by Corey Lewandowski, the former Trump campaign manager, current CNN commentator. There was also a report came out that the Manafort, while taking that money from Ukrainians, was secretly lobbying American lawmakers with the Podesta Group, which is run by John and Tony Podesta. And if you've heard that name, it's because John Podesta is the chairman of Hillary Clinton's campaign.
So this is new. Now, one thing you just said is actually news. It's just for the first time it's been tweeted out by a former campaign manager.
Right.
All of this stuff was out in the open because he's a private citizen. He's been doing this stuff. I've been watching a lot of old SummerSlam clips to get caught up for this week. This just reminds me of Rusev's first run when they were really playing up the Russian thing. There's a great sign in the Staples Center of Putin doing the yes, yes, yes Daniel Bryant thing when for Rusev's first entrance in SummerSlam 2 years ago. So what's old is new again and vice versa.
Yeah, there was also something circling on Twitter, like all the SEC complaints that the WWE gets. And one of them was this kind of illiterate thing about how Rusev spelled about four different ways and the complaint was being anti-American and you can't do that on television. All from that time period. Yeah, I'll try to dig that up for the show notes.
Whoever filed that complaint didn't realize the entire history of wrestling.
Yeah, they forgot about that. So with Manafort's name in the news for bad reasons, Trump decided to bring in Stephen Bannon, the chairman of Breitbart News, as his chief executive. Breitbart, a right-wing site, or when did people start using the word alt-right?
This is the first week I've heard of it, and it's only been used to describe conspiracy theory / lies, which is so fun.
Right, which is such water carrying. Like you can't. Okay, so that's the alt-right, is the conspiracy theories and all that stuff. But the presidential candidate of the major party, wouldn't he just be like the standard right? If they're doing the same thing, what's the alt-right? I don't know. I'm confused. But, bringing in a Breitbart guy, one of the main conspiracy sites, one of the main sites that's kind of fermenting dissent behind the Trump campaign. He also promoted a Kellyanne Conway, a pollster, to his campaign manager. He hasn't had one since June 20th when they fired Lewandowski, kind of roughly coinciding with, the last couple months of chaos. I like this quote from Terry Sullivan, who ran Rubio's campaign. He said, "The Trump and Breitbart both, quote, both play to the lowest common denominator of people's fears. It's a match made in heaven." I know that was pretty appropriate for our purposes.
Absolutely. There's that, one little note I want to point out here that Politico Playbook has this morning. This relates back to what you just said. Trump's first speech after he fired Corey Lewandowski in June and elevated Paul Manafort was heralded even by Vox, which relates to what happened while we were sleeping. This is just, we're repeating ourselves on like a 3-month cycle at this point. It's sort of like every single WWE storyline.
You know, so these moves with Manafort kind of being, moved down and Bannon being moved up. CNN's, I think it was Brian Keller, asked a Trump Organization lawyer, Michael Cohen. She asked him this.
All right, well, let me ask you about this. So you say it's not a shakeup, but you guys are down. And it makes
Says
sense
who?
That there would...
Says
polls,
who?
Most of them. All of them?
Says who?
Polls. I just told you. I answered your question.
Okay. Which polls?
All of them.
Okay. And your question is?
Okay. So my question is, I don't think it is really surprising when facing a challenge and trying to make a turnaround that there would be some, let's at least say some adjustments, okay? So I guess what my real question is here that I did not get to get to is, what is the point of this? If you're calling it an expansion of winners, as you put it, working on the campaign, what is it about? To what end?
This idea of, like, says who? You know, who cares about the polls? Who cares about reality? Like, you get to make your own reality. And that seems to be what the Trump playbook from the very top is.
See, you were going with a general comparison of playing with your own reality, and that totally makes sense. I was going to go that this is their Stone Cold Steve Austin new what chant.
I don't know if the cadence works.
The cadence doesn't work unless as much for an arena of people chanting one-syllable words, but hear me out. If you're a pundit, says who? Wasn't that great? Says who?
Yeah.
Long pause.
Yeah.
You talk. Says who?
Long pause.
I guess. Someone talks over. Someone talks over. That's, says who? Long pause. This is their what chant.
It's the new what? It's the CNN what chant.
So
we can thank basically mob lawyer Michael Cohen, Mickey Cohen, for says who. That was a pretty great. I mean, and Keller going all of them. I mean, like, just the dumbfounded, like, all the polls say that, dude.
She's definitely, but, up until last night, she was going to win this week. It is the best. That's the best TV interview I've seen in this campaign.
Yeah. No, that was definitely, I mean, that's been memeified pretty quickly. But yeah, so the big story they've been talking about, I'm guessing, is this Trump's apology.
Yes.
I use that loosely.
Sometimes in the heat of debate and speaking on a multitude of issues, you don't choose the right words, or you say the wrong thing. I have done that. And believe it or not, I regret it. And I do regret it, particularly where it may have caused personal pain. Too much is at stake for us to be consumed with these issues. But one thing I can promise you this, I will always tell you the truth.
Could you have a more non-apology apology?
Yeah, no, it's definitely the I'm sorry if my words offended you apology.
It's so that's great.
So, like, that's like the most common apology of the outrage era.
Is American that the term? Wait, stop. Is that the term? Are we no longer in the new era? We're in the outrage era?
Politically.
I'm going to go with the new era, actually. I think.
All right, we're in the new era? Okay.
I think we're in the new era.
The new era. Okay, well, you know, there's been a brand split. Team Red and Blue, obviously, which I don't think we've called out that before, but yeah.
How did we miss that? It's so obvious.
I was thinking that the other day, yeah. Long bike rides on the beach, I'm thinking about Democrats, Republicans, SmackDown, and Raw. So it's that Trump gives, I mean, this is going to be heralded as his apology. If you watch the speech, the body language, his tone of voice, nothing has changed. He was just reading new texts that someone fed him. This has once again become the question that we've been asking, that people have been asking since May, is this Trump pivoting? Is this the face turn? And here's what Trump had to say about that. Everyone talks about, oh, you've got to pivot. I don't want to pivot. I don't want to change. You have to be you. If you start pivoting, you're not being honest with people. No, I am who I am.
He's got to get his spots, and Hulk's going to be Hulk. Trump's going to be Trump.
Yeah. I mean, if you read that, let me do it. Yeah. Everyone talks about, oh, you got to pivot, brother. I don't want to pivot, brother. I don't want to change, brother. You have to be you, brother. If you start pivoting, you're not being honest with people, brother. I am who I am, brother. Yeah, it works. It's a Hogan promo.
I think you just also created your next Twitter account. It's Trump Hogan, just adding brother to every single Trump quote.
Brother to Trump quotes and Trump tweets.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And we've got the zeitgeist.
We should move on to the biggest story of the media week.
Gawker, in the wake of the Hulk Hogan lawsuit, was bought by Univision for, I believe, $138 million. They bought the whole they bought the whole Gawker, you know, set, which includes Jezebel and Gizmodo and Deadspin. But actually, Gawker.com itself will cease operations, I believe, next week.
Hulk Hogan tweeted out, they messed with the wrong guy, brother. HH, because, you know, initials. He's got a corporate account that other people are tweeting from.
Also, he signed all the tweets there, and this isn't a novel concept. Many people have brought this up. But, like, he signs all his tweets Hulk Hogan, but HH is also Heil Hitler. It's also, like, it's just not, it's a white supremacist sign-off. It's just,
and also, it's a made-up name. His name isn't Hulk Hogan. Hulk Hogan didn't win the case. Terry won the case.
Well, this is breaking news coming in. Hulk Hogan, not his real name, it turns out. So Peter Thiel and Hulk Hogan have defeated Gawker. So be careful if you're out there and you say anything bad about our plutocrat overlords or our 80s wrestling legends.
We are treading on thin fucking ice.
But possibly not as much thin ice as we pivot to wrestling. Not as much thin ice as three wrestlers this week, Paige, Eva Marie and Alberto Del Rio, who are all suspended 30 days for violating the wellness policy.
You've so the wellness this policy, team PED.
Yeah, because they love abbreviating. They love abbreviating names. So if they bring them back as a heel faction, that'll be Team PED. That's the thing. The wellness policy, without getting way into it, it's generally for steroids and kind of harder drugs. They never announced what the substance was, which, you know, leads to all this confusion and speculation, like we saw with Roman Reigns just a month ago.
But let me stop you right there. The Roman Reigns, though, that came out as it's not steroids, it's most likely Adderall. These do come out over time. Go ahead.
In the dirt sheets and rumors. I mean, so, you know, don't get worked by the dirt sheets. You never know specifically what these guys got popped for or what they...
It is SummerSlam weekend. It is SummerSlam weekend, and of the three wrestlers, it didn't feature the youngest Divas champion of all time. She was not billed. It didn't feature one of the most recent U.S. champions of all time. No, it featured Eva Marie's technically in-ring debut as a member of SmackDown, even though she's been part of SummerSlam for the last, like, 3 years.
Well, and even though she probably wasn't actually going to wrestle because her current gimmick is that after a grand entrance, she either has a wardrobe malfunction or tweaks an ankle or gets stuck in traffic and doesn't actually wrestle, which has been a great gimmick.
Yeah, it's a
because
great
it totally gimmick. Plays on it plays on the meta understanding of Eva Marie that she's this she's a model who can't wrestle or talk, this kind of uncanny valley person, and it's actually been the best use of her. Since she gets so much heat just naturally.
I think it's been great well.
All three of them also.
Go ahead, I apologize.
No problem. Also, all three are currently filming or just finished filming Total Divas this season. Who knows? And they don't work the wellness policy. Like, they don't use it they will use it after the fact for storyline, but they never report somebody under their real name gets suspended. I mean, this is where it gets into they're actually a publicly traded company. So definitely say that this also covers, it doesn't cover pot or alcohol. That stuff is fine if you're performing under that, but it does include like cocaine. You know, so maybe Del Rio, I'm just speculating here, Del Rio, Paige, Eva Marie, on the set of Total Divas, partying with Mexico's greatest export. That's all I'm speculating.
Oh, that's fun. It's a fun time.
That's fun. It's we have fun here. Yeah, so speaking of, you know, your youngest Divas champion in Paige and a diva who is, or a woman who is actually on the card until her suspension, one of the big things in WWE World this week was, as we get ready for a big week of wrestling, was a WWE 24 special on the Women's Evolution.
Now, did you watch
kind of look
this?
Back.
Did you watch this by choice, or did you watch this because I asked you to watch it?
I was going to watch it by choice.
Okay.
And so I watched most of it this morning.
There is way more interesting stuff in this than anything that happened on Raw or SmackDown this week. We're finally getting to like open revisionist history where we can now mention China. We can now show photos of AJ Lee. We can now mention senatorial runs as positive things.
Yes. And definitely their PR campaign since the, as we'll get into the stuff they kind of brought about last summer's Divas Revolution and brought up, you know, we talked about not as much on this podcast, but on the WrestleMania podcast, the kind of the, how the women's division has changed over the years in WWE. Yeah, I mean, I put in some notes. What are your thoughts of this? You know, you mentioned this kind of revisionist history.
This is the only major Hillary Clinton stuff I wanted to talk about today. Because we could talk about the Clinton Foundation and how that, for all intents and purposes, is going to cease how it currently exists.
Right.
There's really no wrestling equivalent to that because Vince McMahon never would have rolled over like that.
Nope.
This really reminded me of all the vignettes that you saw at the Democratic National Convention. Stephanie is playing the role essentially of Chelsea, telling the story of women's wrestling, trying to put over women's wrestling, taking a lot of the credit. Also giving up some credit for people that maybe don't deserve it, like Fabulous Moolah.
Fuck Moolah.
Yeah, we've had a strict fuck Moolah consensus on this podcast for a very long time. But yeah, let's just run through it with the notes that you have. You can go to...
Right. Yeah, so it starts off, they were at WrestleMania Star in Dallas, and they had Mark, you know, one of the things they show is Mark Carano, who, if people have watched Total Divas, he's the twerpy guy with the ball haircut that kind of lords over the women's division, at least on the TV. And he brought up how, you know, how depressing it was 3 years ago at WrestleMania 29, when WrestleMania still had numbers, that their Divas match got canceled at Gorilla, like at the last minute. Just a reminder for what that actually was. That was an 8-person intergender match with Brodus Clay, Tensai, the Funkadactyls versus Damian Sandow, Cody Rhodes, and the Bellas. So yeah, we can just count down there. So Brodus Clay's out of the company. Tensai is the head trainer in NXT. Cameron was fired this year. Cody Rhodes quit this year. Damian Sandow was fired this year. And Brie Bella retired. And Nikki Bella is possibly returning as soon as this weekend. That whole match, or what would have been, was replaced with a Brodus Clay dance segment with all the grandmas. It was a pretty low point for wrestling and women's wrestling in general. You know, but and then bringing it to WrestleMania Star, where they had a 10 diva tag, it was still divas, and then the women's title match that was probably the best match of the night. But yeah, this documentary, I mean, it's these WWE 24s are really good. It's their answer for 30 for 30. I'm not sure there's who's involved and who makes them, but they definitely feel like that. And yeah, you're right with the stuff that, I mean, they even show Hillary Clinton, because the whole thing of here, women are having this moment in sports, in pop culture, you know, and they want to be a part of it, and they are a part of it. But it's also that the way that WWE does everything, where it's like, we're relevant. And so they insert themselves into this narrative of Ronda Rousey and Serena Williams and, you know, Taylor Swift and Hillary Clinton and
And some of that, is definitely applicable. You could, like, the Rousey stuff is perfectly fine to use. She was part of WrestleMania. It was one of the biggest moments when they had Silicon Valley WrestleMania. Oh, God. Weird. Good brand integration, guys. And she got her nickname from Roddy Piper. That she had an actual relationship with the WWE.
Definitely.
And if she wins her next few fights, inevitably she will join WrestleMania or two. That makes sense. Hillary Clinton... doesn't really make sense. I think this is the first time on like network programming they mentioned the Linda McMahon Senate runs in a produced documentary. And once again, yes, Chris is correct. It is their answer for 30 for 30. And it's, I guess, technically a documentary, but it's a documentary about the inner workings of a weird company that's both fake and real at the exact same time.
And it's also made by that same company.
So
constantly that everything is constantly... a work. So,
let's keep that in mind when we're talking about the history of the Divas Revolution.
And I think it does a good job of kind of getting through it. It hand waves a little bit to the Moolah era. And for anyone, because when we throw Fuck Moolah around, I just want to make it clear. That's because, like, do 2 seconds of research on the fabulous Moolah, who was basically a pimp for all women wrestlers for about 30 years. And I mean that word literally. It then moves through the Attitude Era, gives this kind of brutal montage of what the Attitude Era was known for with women, which is TNA. And then it starts to get to where there was progress, which was, you know, the wrestlers like Trish Stratus and Lita and Victoria and Jazz, who were like, no, we're going to go out there and wrestle like the men do. My favorite part that I caught in the documentary was Becky talking about how she looked up to Lita and basically her saying, in her accent of, your tongue is showing. And she's like, I know, it's cool. That was the cutest Becky moment when Lita made wearing your thong outside your pants a style in the late 90s.
It's also interesting that the best match of the most recent WrestleMania, it did feature 3 women. That's true. But it featured 2 women closer to 30 than to 20. That's also interesting. We now have adults wrestling, not just selling TNA. One of which was like a volleyball standout in collegiate sports. One of which like took some time off from wrestling and like traveled the world and became a flight attendant and like never really made money on TNA. And then the other one is just like a wrestling nerd who's like a first cousin to Snoop that grew up loving Eddie Guerrero. So even
and it's kind of a wrestling prodigy, yeah.
Exactly. So even now that the women that we're seeing are kind of meant to be doing this, it's not just a way to get a show on E. And also, if you want a show on E, there's no shade in that. There's nothing wrong with that. But like the 2 biggest stars in the last 10 years for women's wrestling have been the Bella Twins. They were never wrestlers. They were models that became wrestlers. And that's perfectly fine.
Yeah. And that's what this does. You know, at certain points in the documentary, they definitely highlight the diversity of styles, you know, both wrestling styles, personal styles, the whole diversity of the female roster, which they actually have done they're starting to do a decent job of. I didn't see it in that. I didn't finish the thing. I don't know. Did they get to Nia Jax at all?
They allude to
really
Nia.
Fit the narrative.
They allude to Nia because she was part of WrestleMania on the outskirts. Like, you'll be here soon. Same with your Bayley character. And then in the final montage, they show like all these amazing women in the past few years, including AJ Lee.
Right. AJ Lee, the real life wife of CM Punk, who has also left the company. And yeah, and this is as far as the revisionist history and kind of fast forward to this. The whole Divas Revolution thing, which they do mention that it happened, the hashtag Give Divas a Chance that was trending worldwide for like a day and a half was after this pretty egregious 30-second match in February of 2015 where the Bella Twins went over Paige and Emma with like, they went straight to the finish, basically. And so people started going, yeah, Give Divas a Chance. These 30-second matches are ridiculous. You know, at this time, you know, early 2015, you're not seeing like, the 5-star matches yet, but the women in NXT for at least 6 months prior had been doing, you know, decent storylines, good, you know, normal length matches, all that. So on that same day, you know, Stephanie McMahon had tweeted at Patricia Arquette, you know, for having the courage to fight for hashtag women's rights on such a grand platform for what she said at the Oscars. And AJ Lee had retweeted her and added her and said, your female wrestlers have record-selling merchandise and have starred in the highest-rated segment of the show several times, and yet they receive a fraction of the wages and screen time of the majority of the male roster. Hashtag use your voice. Because I think they use that. I don't know if that was a jab at her too. I don't know if they use that use your voice hashtag. And that got some traction. You know, that was starting to get mainstream coverage of AJ calling out her boss in a very real way to be like, hey, let's put your money where your mouth is.
It's sort of like when Corey Lewandowski tweeted out a story about Paul Manafort's millions of dollars.
It's a little bit like that. But you know, AJ Lee, who's no longer, you know, the 3 months later, she's out of the company. You know, her husband's out of the company. You know, they've kind of paved their own way their way for kind of where the company is at now. 5 months after that, the Twitter battles, you know, Stephanie comes out and announces the Divas Revolution, basically taking credit for the everything that was happening in NXT and the women of the main roster. Bringing up Sasha and Charlotte and Becky and kind of bringing new life to the women's roster. But I like that when in the documentary, when they show her backstage at WrestleMania Star, and she's like, you know, when I brought this up, and it's kind of, it is great. I mean, the boss takes the credit. That's how it works. But it's great to see them so on message that, like, for history's sake, everything that the women have done will be because of Stephanie McMahon.
Yeah, Stephanie McMahon, who fought at SummerSlam 2014 for her first match in 10 years.
And defeating Brie Bella, because if you're a part-time wrestler, you should probably go over your full-time talent. The documentary is solid. That goes to the major kind of story point. The two big ones are the NXT TakeOver Brooklyn last August with Sasha and Bayley. Probably had one of the best matches of all time.
Let's stop there. You were there. That was not the headlining match. I think it was Kevin Owens, right? The headliner.
It was Kevin Owens and Finn Balor in Balor's first ladder match for the championship. A major match that was nowhere close. Even watching the clips, and yes, they do a really good job editing, but even watching the clips, I was getting chills again. I get chills every time I watch that match, the Bayley Sasha match, just because of how impressive, how important it was. And yeah, I was there, and it was like, that's one of those rare, like, oh, I was there moments that I actually have for wrestling. And I'm very pleased with that. But yeah, that wasn't the headlining match. They would go on to headline a network special with their Iron Woman match, the 30-minute match. And then, you know, as the documentary kind of, is bracketed from what I saw, you know, the women were literally the centerpiece of the marketing of WrestleMania. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's Charlotte, Sasha, and Becky in there, was right up there with Undertaker and Roman Reigns. So it was they actually do. I mean, I'll just kind of sum up how I feel about it. I mean, yes, it's revisionist history. That's how they do things. That's how all this stuff works, but they actually have made some gains in the last year and a half, and they actually are moving it in the right direction.
I don't think anyone's going to disagree with you. I do think there are two takeaways and two tips for everyone listening to this. Please follow Stephanie McMahon around October 15th. This is sincere. Follow her through October 15th through at least January 21st. I want to see if and when she supports Hillary Clinton because they are family friends with Donald Trump. We all know this. But she's also an opportunist. Is this going to become a storyline? Will the next pay-per-view after the election, if Hillary wins, be headlined by Sasha and Bayley?
Something like that is very possible.
Because in the past, we should be getting right around now is our candidate versus candidate match. In 2012, here's your Trump versus Romney match. In 2008, it's your Obama versus Hillary intergender match on like a Raw. We haven't seen that yet. I'm waiting for that to happen. I don't think we're going to see it this year.
It's not going to happen this year.
But where's our WWE 24 about the great history of presidential impersonators wrestling each other?
It's a missed opportunity, I'll tell you. As we wrap this up, we were talking about last year's TakeOver Brooklyn. That is happening. The Takeover Brooklyn 2 is happening tomorrow on Saturday night. Once again, from Barclays. I won't be there this year. But I want to do a quick, I don't know if you've been watching any NXT, but just wanted to highlight a couple things to look for on that one.
There's only two matches I care about, and both matches should be on the main card, and everyone knows that. Everyone that cares about this stuff already knows that.
Right. So Samoa Joe versus Shinsuke Nakamura for the NXT Championship, and Asuka versus Bayley for the Women's Championship should be, you know, potential steal, be the best matches of the entire weekend of wrestling. And it could also be possibly last matches. You know, if Samoa Joe loses the belt, he's had a short run, but, you know, if they're going to bring him up and make him a heel on possibly SmackDown, you know, they're about to lose one of their big heels in Del Rio. That's a possibility. Bayley, I doubt she wins the belt, because that would signal her staying there a while. I think they're going to keep Asuka undefeated, and in which case she's out of things to do there and should also be main roster bound. She's already been on a main roster pay-per-view. There's a couple of matches. I mean, there's the Revival versus Johnny Gargano and Tommaso Ciampa for the tag belts should be a really great match. All four of those guys can really go. An interesting match, we have one debut. Ember Moon, formerly Athena on the Indies, female wrestler, versus Billie Kay, who's been in the Performance Center for a year or two. Ember Moon is, she's 27. She was kind of like a, you know, she wasn't like an Asuka who people like indie fans really knew. But if, you know, women's indie fans know her, she does a finisher. She does a top rope stunner called the O-Face, which I'm sure they will be renaming. but that should be a fun one. And then the NXT as the wrestling, it is, there's just so much, you know, fake fighting and real fighting this weekend. There's also UFC 202, but then, on Sunday, the big show, SummerSlam, also from Barclays, an 11 match card, a 2 hour pre-show, a probably 4.5 hour pay-per-view. Are you ready for this much wrestling?
No. I will not be watching this live. I will be in Maine. Yeah, I'll be in Maine. So I'm going to just end up ruining either staying off Twitter and social media for like 5 days or just getting results and not caring.
That'll probably be the way to do it. I mean, just a loaded card. I don't even know how much, if there's any ones that you want to talk on here specifically, but Brock versus Randy Orton, Balor versus Rollins, Ambrose, Ziggler, you know, Cena, Styles, Russo versus Roman, Sasha versus Charlotte, The New Day versus The Club, Enzo and Cass versus Jericho and Owens, The Miz versus Cruz.
It's really, really, really good.
Cesaro, Sheamus. Yeah, it's kind of like a dream card, and this is the whole thing of SummerSlam being the Smarks WrestleMania. These matches, you know, a lot of these are either starting new feuds or culminating feuds. You know, they're like Cena versus Styles is not, you know, I think they... And same thing with Lesnar Orton. They aren't necessarily dream matches that fans have been salivating for, but there is a really good built-in story there. I mean, the Cena Styles one is a month-long feud. The Orton Lesnar one, they threw together kind of because they had to, but they've made a compelling story out of it.
I've been trying to get into SummerSlam. I don't love the lore nearly as much as WrestleMania because WrestleMania to me is like the end all be all. It is literally the granddaddy of them all. SummerSlam, like you said, is the Smarks WrestleMania. So I've been like rewatching old matches, and I think the biggest match of the weekend for most people is Brock Lesnar, Randy Orton. I could care less about both of these dudes. I don't. It doesn't scratch the itch that I like about wrestling. So I decided to like, all right, I'm going to go back. I'm going to watch a bunch of Brock stuff. 2015 Brock Taker, one of the worst matches of the year. Fair to say.
Yeah.
Okay, no one cares.
Hell yeah.
2014, Brock Lesnar versus social justice warrior John Cena. Brock Lesnar has no respect for John Cena and just destroyed the man.
That's a great match. That's
it is a great match.
But that was him coming back from being away for a little bit.
What's an even better match, though, is SummerSlam 2013, Brock Lesnar, CM Punk. I am completely shocked that I had not watched this until last night. this is the best match of Brock Lesnar's career.
Yeah, I haven't seen that one in quite a while.
Rewatch that. He has actual respect for CM Punk. The whole premise of it is it's centered around Paul Heyman. It's really, really, really well done. Everything in the match makes sense. So I don't think we're going to get that this weekend. Lesnar does not seem to care in any way whatsoever. There's really no political comparison to him. He's just a scary man who wants the country to be united. He's just a white boy from Minnesota. That's a UFC reference. It doesn't matter. Rewatch that. If you have the network, rewatch the Lesnar-Punk 2013 match. It's really, it's not five-star, but it's really good. And I want to talk about three matches, if that's okay with you, for this SummerSlam.
Go for it.
Clearly, Cena Styles, to me, is very fascinating because with Cena, we have our man from Massachusetts versus our man, so he's from a blue state versus our man from a red state. AJ Styles doesn't understand about gay people. That's a reference. I apologize if that sounds homophobic. It's meant to. It's AJ Styles. And John Cena, like I said before, social justice warrior. This kind of represents where America's at to me right now. It's just one guy that's like super progressive and doing this for all the right reasons, and one guy that doesn't understand why he had to spend a lot of years overseas and just didn't work out. And I know I'm oversimplifying that, so let's oversimplify it even more. The Roman Reigns Rusev match will be incredibly fascinating. Roman Reigns, really, really, really skilled wrestler, still hated by the Smarks for reasons I still don't understand. And Rusev is a Bulgarian brute who's from, was it Florida? Originally Florida?
No, he's from Bulgaria.
I know, but like, where do they live now? He's always at that.
I think they were either in Tennessee or Florida.
Yeah, because they love like the Nashville Predators hockey team. Lana, his IRL wife, total divas wife, and in-ring wife. They're now married. It's great. They're doing the wedding thing. They're doing the Macho Man, Miss Elizabeth thing, but they actually seem to like each other at this point. This is another America versus the world match, which is always great. It'll be interesting to see if Putin comes up in this. Also, if Putin does come up, is Putin a good guy or a bad guy? Serious question. Could you use Putin as a bad guy if your family is part of the rules committee for the RNC and it, like, still supports Trump? Is Putin a bad guy? Will Putin be mentioned at this SummerSlam?
Is Putin a bad guy in kayfabe?
Exactly.
Putin will not. They've pivoted away from the anti.
I understand that, yes, but you can't control. You can't control every sign, which brings me back to 2014 SummerSlam, the Putin yes chant sign.
I would be very surprised if they decide to cut to a camera that has a Putin sign on it. But we'll see.
Yeah, exactly. That'll be interesting. And finally, my match of the night, a lot of Smarks match of the night, Jericho in his possibly greatest role in his 20-plus year career, Kevin Owens versus Enzo and Cass. Here's why I love this match. Two of the best talkers on mic with Jericho and Kevin Owens, both are Canadian and both are heels, and they like to fuck with the crowd. You brought this up on a previous show where they got a match between Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens. It was a dark match or something like that. They got the crowd to chant USA.
Right.
And both men are from Canada. It's great. And Enzo and Cass are they're the most fun right now. They are the 2016 New Day. No offense to the New Day. Enzo is a social justice warrior as well. We've played that promo on the show before. It's finally getting some traction about the historic and systematic racism of this entire country. It'll be interesting to see.
Not a joke.
Not a joke. It'll be really interesting to see if any of that comes out. This is in Brooklyn. This is in a blue state with two Canadians and two guys from Brooklyn. I really am interested to see if there's any political overtones to this in any way.
Yeah, I can definitely see that happening, especially since, you know, their last Enzo and Cass, the last pay-per-view at Battleground in D.C., they basically just the match, I don't even remember, but the promo beforehand, I definitely do. And I'm curious. I'm sure they're going to have to do some sort of promo with the guys involved. I like that Cass is, like, you know, by far the least, you know, probably the least skilled wrestler and talker, yet very impressive in both. And this should be a good match for a lot of reasons.
Yeah, this is going to be a great wrestling weekend. It's going to be a pretty boring political weekend in theory. All of the NBC shows are off because of the Olympics, the closing ceremonies on Sunday. I'm wondering if Mark Henry will be there. That's a serious question. I think we're done for wrestling for now. Is that fair to say?
Yeah.
All right. There's two things that we didn't get to in our political section that I want to mention before we say goodnight. There's a lovely analysis of Donald Trump's Twitter usage that came out over last weekend. And it's really fun. If it's an Android tweeting, it's Donald Trump. And if it's an iPhone tweeting, it's the campaign. How do you know this? The use of hashtags. The use of the words like badly, crazy, weak, spent, joke, male, strong, talking, ago, Brexit, dud, dumb, Senate, etc. Those are Trump. And stuff like hashtag make America great again, hashtag Trump 2016, join, hashtag America first, hashtag vote Trump. That's a campaign staffer.
Right.
This is the difference between Stephanie McMahon playing the villain versus Stephanie McMahon playing the hero and hashtag women's rights. It's true.
And yeah. No, it's a good – I'm just trying to wrap my head around that one.
Finally, this is from last Sunday's paper, and I thought we were going to talk about stuff like this until there was actual news this week. This is in the third graph, and this is in Sunday's paper. Trump says presidential run has boosted his business. Here we go. Quote, I think people like politics, and they like to be around the name and maybe me, Trump said in a deposition, a copy of which was obtained by the Washington Post on Friday, August 12th. I think people really dig it. Trump understands what's best for business. The authority never went away. It just ran for president.
And I'd like to say that I'd like to ask, can you dig it, sucker, is what I'd like to ask. I think that's what Booker T would like to ask candidate Trump.
Oh, God.